off stage and on the air, performance number 601. I am your host with the almost most, Lisa Sheps, and I'm joined by the hostess with the mostest, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello. I think you are a hostess with the mostest yourself, Miss Sheps.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1. HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During the pandemic, we are pre-recorded. We'll be right back. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Minutes.
525,000 moments so dear.
525,600 minutes.
How do you measure?
Measure a year in daylight.
It is Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. On the show today, we have the Hideout Theater talking about all their goings on during the pandemic and their future plans. And later on in the show, we'll be talking to Bear's Rebecca Fonte, who is the new executive director of AGLIP. All that with news and views of the world of theater with Lisa and Nicole and some music. Stick around. We'll be back. People,
I love that song. So you know that song is now a contender that people argue is a Christmas song. Also, like
people are saying that. So that's Seasons of Love, from Rent, and that is it's an inauguration song. So it's Seasons of Love and Let the Sun Shine In. And unfortunately, those of you who are on the podcast are not hearing this show, the whole song, but you can get it by going to offstageonair.com and clicking on the YouTube. I need to tell you who's in this song.
The Sunshine is Hair. We should say that. It's not all Rent. It was a mashup. Let the Sunshine part
it
Hair.
Is. It is. It lets the sunshine in. It is Hair. So Chris Jackson, Laura Benanti, Betty Buckley, Jenny Yershowitz, Ruthie Ann Miles, Orfei, Andy Carl, Audra McDonald, Rosie Perez, James Monroe Englehart, Cheetah Rivera, Charlotte D'Amboise, Daphne Ruben Vega, Anthony Rapp, Leslie Uggams. I mean, it goes on.
And,
Renee Elise Goldsberry, Kiala Settle. It's amazing. And Wayne Brady, which just for fun. And actually, this is something that you don't get in the YouTube. If you go down, it tells you line by line who's singing what, in case you don't know. I have to tell you that Laura Benanti did not look like Laura Benanti to me. And she's a very recognizable face for me. But yeah. To me, she didn't. She looked a little different. But it's a fun piece. I should say before we say anything else that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not those necessarily of Co-op's board or staff. It is simply the opinions of the people on this show. So that was in relation to our new administration. And everybody, many people in the theater business are happy with the changing of the guard. And I should say,
in the art community.
Yeah, didn't I say that? True. So I should say that for you and me, Nicole and Lisa, this is our first show of the new administration. Correct. Because we are pre-recording this. For everybody else,
yes,
our show.
Right.
Our
aired,
show.
Our, that's right.
Our show comes on at 1 o'clock. He was inaugurated at 11 o'clock our time. So by the time folks listened to the show last week, he was the president. But he wasn't for us.
No.
So this
it's
is
time travel without having to leave your couch. That's what we do here each week.
That's true. Well, I, for one, am very happy with the change.
Yes.
I will say this, that when we go out for break, we are going to listen to Randy Rainbow's version of, oh my God, what's the song we just listened to? Seasons of Love.
Seasons of Love.
So, of course, it's Treasons of Trump, I think, is what it is.
I was about to say, I can't remember the, it was Treasons of something, if I remember.
Yeah. Before we leave the subject completely, well, no, we're not going to leave the subject completely. Let's go back to the inauguration. Did you watch the inauguration?
I watched bits and pieces of it, but no, not all of it.
Ugh, I watched the whole thing. And I have to say, of course, let's not talk about the politics. What I want to talk about is Lady Gaga and J-Lo and, of course, Amanda Gorman. So I'm assuming you saw at least those three performances or those two performances and the poem.
I saw the poem. I did not see the Lady Gaga or the J-Lo.
Okay.
They drive me nuts. I'm sorry.
They were awesome. And they were so totally different. Lady Gaga was Lady Gaga. She was crazy, not over the top, but she was very animated. And J-Lo came in really simply. And I just thought they were a great counterpoint to each other.
She does that at times. She's not always like in your face,
right.
But sometimes course, she can be. They both can be, actually. But they are very different.
They are. And, of course, the star, as we noted, was Amanda Gorman. And that young woman is amazing. I would really like to get her here somehow.
I would love it if you could figure out how to. I'll put my thinking cap on.
Her two books shot to the top of the charts in the New York Times bestseller list afterwards. I mean, she's got to be on cloud nine. So she was just so poised and so beautiful and so articulate. And I say that because she suffered with a speech impediment. She could not say her R's. So very much like President Biden, who suffered from a stutter.
Mm-hmm.
So she was on Good Morning America, I think, the next day. And she talked about, And she was a different person on Good Morning America. Did you see her on Good Morning America?
Well, I mean, wouldn't you kind of be? Think about the two different scenarios. And I mean, I know they're both on national platforms, but they're really two totally different scenarios.
Well, you also saw someone performing at a presidential inauguration.
Yeah,
and then you saw her talking, and she became a young millennial. I guess she's not a millennial. She's younger than a millennial, whatever the younger kids are called.
I forgot what the new generation is called. There is a name for it.
I don't know, but
I don't know.
But she was amazing, and that's it. So I have to ask you a question because I'm looking at my notes. How does one spell J-Lo?
J and capital J and then capital L and then lowercase o.
I said J-L-O-W.
It's low for Lopez, short for
yeah,
Lopez.
No, I know what it stands for.
Yeah.
I'm just saying how I wrote it.
It's a little O.
So the final little thing that we're going to talk about that has to do a little bit with politics is Laura Benanti has been doing Melania on the Stephen Colbert show for a long time. As she discussed when we interviewed her before.
She was asked about it a lot of times, so she discussed.
Correct. We did not ask her about it, but she did her final performance. Did you happen to see that?
I saw a little bit on the YouTubes.
Yeah, I looked it on the YouTubes. It was too long for me to watch, and quite frankly, I get a little bored with it. But she jumped into a production number. She did, from Little Mermaid. The opening number, I believe, from Little Mermaid, which I forgot what the name of it is. I love Laura Benanti. Not crazy about the whole Melania thing. Glad it's over. Not crazy about Little Mermaid. I'm not a big fan.
I don't think you've ever been a fan. Did we go see it together when it came last time?
We may have. I've seen it so many times because in my days as a Greater Austin High School Musical Theater adjudicator, every high school does it. So I saw it multiple times.
Yeah, so you really have seen it a lot of times.
So now I have not read this article. So I will just say that right up front. But the headline in the New York Times is Bridgerton's approach to race and casting has precedent on stage. And it's an article by Matt Wolf of the New York Times talking about the London stage who has been doing this kind of casting for a long, long time.
I didn't see this article. When did it come out?
Let's see if it says a date on it. January 21st. So that would have been Thursday.
Oh, that was like last week earlier when I missed it. And it must have probably was in the email recap. I feel like I've been in a time warp.
So it's interesting. So they talk about they've had a black actor in Carousel as a villager. They've had in Amadeus. What do they say? It doesn't say what they are. But they've evidently done a lot of casting that is not typical of those roles prior to Bridgerton. Now, are you a Bridgerton fan? Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's actually really a wonderful. It's wonderful fluff, and it's kind of sexy. And I know I said at the introduction that we would be talking to Bears Rebecca on the second half, but we're not. I'm taking host prerogative. And we're going.
Yeah.
Anyway, you and I spoke to Bears Rebecca Fonte, who is the new artistic director of AGLIF, which is the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, which they're changing the name. And I'm very happy to hear that.
Well, they're not changing the whole name of the organization.
Right. They're changing the name of the festival. Correct. And you'll learn more about that in this interview. Should we just go to it?
I think we shall.
Well, here it is. Nicole, I just got an HBO Max thingamajig.
You did?
I did. And I like it because... Well, yeah, I got it online. And because it's an online thing. But it shows films that you get, like, first run films come right to your TV set now.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like technology.
It's called the future.
Yeah, but you know, we don't talk about film a lot here, but we're going to bring someone on through our Zoom portal that knows a lot about film, works in film, but also has a heavy theatrical background.
I know. I'm excited to talk to this guy.
Oh, you know who this person is. So
I think I magically do.
Okay, well, let's open the Zoom door and see who's there.
Hello.
It's Rebecca Fonte. Hello. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to visit your Zoom room.
We love having you here. For those that didn't hear, we're speaking to Bears Rebecca Fonte, who is the new artistic director of Aglyph Film Festival, which I'm thrilled
Yay!
About.
Yay!
Which Thank used you. To be called, which used to be stand for the Austin Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, but now it's just Aglyph. Oh, now it's all it's. We'll need to talk offline about what it now stands for.
Well, one of the things about me becoming the artistic director is that we are also officially saying that the film festival is going to be called the Prism Film Festival.
Oh, lovely. That's great.
So that'll be easier for you. But the organization will be Aglyph, but it'll be Aglyph Presents the Prism Film Festival.
Yeah.
But all you need to remember is Prism.
Always a big fan of Aglyph. I've got a long history of Aglyph, and we are going to talk about that. So, well, let's just jump right in. So you've been a board member of Aglyph for a long time.
Yeah, I joined the board in February 2016, I believe. So 5 years on the board.
I call that a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good relationship there.
And now you're artistic director. What does that actually mean for a film festival?
It means I get to pick all the films. I get to watch all the films, talk to everybody else who's watching all the films and saying, hey, I love your opinion and I agree with it and I'm going to play this film. Or, hey, I don't care what you think. I like this film. I'm going to play it because I'm artistic director. So I'm directing the artistry.
I'm going to take my film festival and go home if you don't let me do it this way.
Yes, yes. You know, it's Aglyph is great because we've got a huge group of people who watch films with lots of different opinions, and many people have been watching films, you know, for longer than I've been involved with the organization.
Sure.
They all have very strong opinions and they know what works at the festival. So it's actually really great to kind of get to be at the top of that food chain and not have to necessarily be the only voice looking at things.
Sure. Well, I have known and been involved with Aglyph since 2003. And as a founder and someone who ran Transgender Education Network of Texas, it's been interesting to watch Aglyph evolve from a transgender perspective.
For me as well. I mean, I will be the first one to tell you that my first experience going to Aglyph was going to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch at the Arbor there. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been 2003. It could have been 2002, something around that. But you know, I was not out, clearly.
We should tell our listeners that you are identify as a trans woman yourself, correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
We just proudly T.
Proudly T.
So that was just a film I was interested in, and I loved musicals because I was a theater director. So, but then years later, when I got involved with the organization, it was because I was director of programming at Austin Film Festival, and I was getting really involved in film festivals, and I thought I could join the board and help as a film festival professional. So I joined as the heteronormative cisgender white guy.
Been there.
Yeah. And after a couple of years on the board, I was like, hey, by the way, I'm part of the Q community, and came out as trans. So.
Well, great. So, we'll stick with Aglyph for now. What are some of the challenges that you have looking forward to as you take over the helm of the organization?
Well, we're in a pretty good place because I will say one of the things that the previous artistic director, Jim Brunzel, did was really build a high quality of film programming history. So we have a lot of respect for the films that we program. And since I've been with the organization for a while and on the screening committee, I know what we programmed, and I don't intend to go too far from that. Obviously, I'm going to have my own taste. So I will be kind of continuing that. But the biggest issues that we have as an organization, just in general, is just dealing with the fact that the organization is 33 years old and needs to move and change with the times faster. And when I joined the board, I think there were 15 people on the board and 13 of them were male. And there, none of them were trans, you know, at the time. And so we've slowly been remaking the board over the last 5 years, now that we're pretty much gender down the middle and some color on the board, finally, and some trans members of the board. I mean, I was on the board, I'll be leaving. We'll be bringing someone else on the board who's trans. So we'll continue that representation, but you know, the world has changed a lot in 30 years. And you know, the LGBTQ identity has changed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier for people to come out and identify who they are. And strangely, as soon as that happens, more people make movies about that and more people make movies about the different identities. So last year we had an intersex movie. I'd never seen an intersex movie before, honestly. And you know, the first time I saw myself on screen.
Well, in by strict definition, Hedvig is a intersex.
I guess I didn't think of it that way when I saw it.
I said so, in strict definition. That's just me being nitpicky. Yeah.
But this was like, it was called an intersex love story or something like that. Like it was like wearing it on its sleeve there. But like for me, one of the reasons why I never came out is because I didn't understand, I guess, what I was, who I was, until I saw it on screen. You know, and I saw a film called Boy Meets Girl. I saw it at Iglef, and I it was the first time I saw somebody on screen that I was like, oh, so you can just be a girl, and that's you're just a girl, and you're not like this like flamboyant diva, like, you know, walking the runways, RuPaul kind of thing. You are just a girl. And I was like, I've actually never seen that before. And it like opened, it just was like, oh, well, that's what I want. I want to be that.
There's so much of the power of representation. And that speaks to what you talked about going in with regards to, you know, on the other side of the business side of any arts organization, people program what they are versus what the world is. And so that's changing, and you're part of that change. And I think that's really, really wonderful. So when does the film festival actually take place, and how is it going to operate at the next one?
It's going to be the last week of August. So like August 26th through the September something.
Are you planning on being in person?
We're planning on being primarily virtual with some in-person events. I think by then we're all going to feel comfortable meeting together. And, you know, meeting is such an important part of for the queer community, is getting together. So that was really hard last year. So we're going to find a way to do it this year.
Cool. Well, let's just talk real briefly. We don't have a whole bunch of time left. You have a background of theater. You've got a degree in theater. You're a director. And I saw in your bio that you did Corpus Christi here. Did you do the City Theater version of Corpus?
No, was that the Hideout?
It was the Hideout.
Yeah, it was the Texas premiere of Corpus Christi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know the one at
the Hideout on the same episode today.
That's true, we did. It seems like funny. An odd choice for the Hideout, but it wasn't produced by the Hideout, or was it?
No, it was I produced it and rented the space, yes.
So I know when City Theater did it, they were hit with massive protests. Did you get any of that?
We had no protests. We got written up really nicely in all the papers, and it was just like a overflow of love. I don't know why. I guess that's a weird thing that a few years later there was more of a need to protest things, but maybe we just weren't high profile enough.
Well, so how did you go from theater? I mean, the medium is so different. And in an article I read, it said that you wanted to have more control, and we know that film is a director's medium, and theater is kind of a more of a collaborative medium. So was that indeed it, or how'd you make that switch?
Yeah, I mean, I was always a writer too, and so that was part of it, wanting to write my own material and put it on. But I felt bad when a play was over, and then it was over, and there was no record of it, you know. And you spend all this time on it, and it's like, you know, you can never recreate that. And in one way, that's what makes theater special. But in another way, that's what makes it really annoying. So, you know,
we produced at the Ground Floor Theater an amazing production of Fun Home that I did not make an archival videotape of, strictly because I was saying, you know, it's the ephemeral thing of theater. If you missed it, you missed it. And now my heart is breaking because I didn't archive.
You always archive.
Yeah, I know. Stop it. I know that now.
You learned your lesson.
Well, as our parting question, do you have any desire to jump back into theater at all?
It would have to be pretty special. I mean, I'm a musical person, so it would probably have to be a new, like a world premiere of a musical where I could work with the writer and develop something, because that's more fun for me. That was what I really started to get involved with at the Bloomington Playwrights Project in Indiana before I left, was developing new material with playwrights. And that's, it's a lot more of the collaborative process, and that was fun.
I love that.
You talk a lot of theater and you blow my mind all the time when you're like, oh, I saw that workshop of it over in this European town, and I'm like, how did you, you know? And I always go to theater.
I enjoy going still, and then when I'm there, I'm like, it's like another part of my life. It's really weird. I really shut the door on it, and it was when I was living here, I was doing theater, and then, you know, my wife and I decided, look, we got to go to Los Angeles, and you're gonna have to make some connections there if you're gonna move forward. And so we went for 3 years, and that was it. I never did theater again. It's very strange.
Well, cool. We're glad you're here. Bears Rebecca Fonte, I hope you come back on to Offstage and On Air again. Before we go, tell folks where they can get information about Aglyph and where they can get information about you if you have a personal website.
Yeah, the best way to look at about Aglyph is on aglyph.org or our Facebook page, which is very easy to find. We are the only Aglyph. And very soon it'll be prism.org. So awesome. I don't know if people are watching this as an archive. And then my own personal website is bearsfonte.com. bearsfonte.com.
Okay. Bears, Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Bears, Rebecca Fonte, everybody. So we're going to take a break.
This is Patrick Page, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. That's a ridiculous accent. That's not how I really
sound. You could do it again.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa.
And Nicole.
And we are pre-recorded here on KOOP 91.7 FM. So there was an article, and I'm sure you saw this because this was in the Broadway briefing, that IA calls for theaters to become a vaccine site.
I did see that, and they want all the members to help distribute. And
yeah, I would just love to see, no offense to my IA brothers and sisters, but I would just love to get a look at the government's face when they see what these people make.
It's kind of what I thought. I mean, I was like, well, power to you, but like, who's paying that? I was like, okay.
Don't see it happening.
No.
But I love the idea. I love the initiative.
It's the idea.
We want to get,
you know.
Well, and we want our membership to work. So let's open the theaters. That'll give the theater owners a little bit of money. That'll give, and they are indeed correct that those people that run those theaters know how to set them up. But I don't see it happening.
No, but I mean, it's an idea. If you keep putting ideas out there, that's how things come to fruition and happen. So
it is an idea. So then there was an article that came out today I don't know if it came out today. Hold on. I got to look and see when it came out, because today won't be today.
So it won't matter.
Oh, my God. It came out January 19th.
See?
the crux of the article, and this article is in thecurrent.com, and it says community theaters shut out of COVID relief funding lobby for help. So this article is saying that community theaters that do not pay their actors. Did you read this article?
I read about this. I don't know if I read this one in The Current, but
so they think they should be part of Save Our Stages Act. Now, I get a little angry about this because when you read the article, they talk about these community theater companies that have budgets north of $1 million that pay scenic designers and technicians, and everybody gets paid but the actors.
That's the actor.
And I say shame on them, and they do not deserve that money. And they even said in the article, they said, well, we do all this stuff. We have great designers. We have great everything, Broadway quality stuff. This is an opportunity for actors to hone their craft. And I say bull dookie, and I say shame on them.
I wish we had the video up for the listeners again to see Lisa as she was saying all that.
This angers me.
I know. My mind, it was, you know, the little emoji where the mind's blown. That was me.
But for years, this was the mindset of many theater companies. We still have some theaters here in the Austin area that do have that mindset, but that actors are the expendable people. They will pay for absolutely everything else, but they will not pay actors, as if they are doing the actors some kind of favor to allow them to perform on their stage. And I call bunk.
Yes, I know.
So
who got you riled? Well, they're not eligible. So, I mean.
Well, but they're fighting for it.
They're fighting, but.
Well, when you listen to their arguments, I could see how some non-educated people might see a validity to their arguments. And I think that that would be a shame, a crying shame, a doggone shame. All right, I'm calming down now after that rant. But something we probably should have said at the very beginning, and I didn't write it down. Shame on me, I completely forgot. But we had to say goodbye to choreographer, producer, and director Bob Avion. Avion. How do you pronounce his last name?
You know, I've heard it both ways. I think it's Avion, though.
Okay, let's say. But so I should have.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to say Avion. We had to say goodbye to choreographer, producer, and director Bob Avion, who died on January 21st. And he's best known for his choreography of your favorite show, A Chorus Line, of which he got a Tony, which he shared with Michael Bennett.
Yes.
But he was in the original Broadway production of West Side Story. He's in Funny Girl, Henry, Sweet Henry, which I'm not aware. He was the assistant stage manager in I Do, I Do with Mary Martin and Robert Preston.
That's crazy.
I know. And he
rounding them up every day.
He also co-choreographed Promises, Promises. Promises, Promises, I'm all through with.
I do.
Oh my God. We have to go back because you froze and I had gone on and you were still on I Do, I Do.
Oh, you were saying Promises, Promises, and I was laughing and saying I Do, I Do.
Then maybe we weren't frozen. We're just going to leave this in. But he was part of every Michael Bennett production. He was in Coco, Company, Follies, Seesaw, God's Favorite. And he got a Tony for his work with Chorus Line and his work on Ballroom, which didn't live very long.
I was like, I don't think that was a big one.
No, but it doesn't. He died from cardiac arrest. He was 83 years old. So let's take a moment and listen to a little bit of something from A Chorus Line. What do you think we should play from A Chorus Line?
Why don't you play Nothing?
Okay, Nothing. This is going to be from the 2006 revival.
Sounds good.
try to feel the motion.
So, you know, the Austin theater scene is has loads of theaters, but we also have a lot of improv theaters.
We do. We have a large scene. We used to talk, we've talked about the scene a lot. We used to talk a lot more about it.
We have, but the original here in town is The Hideout. And they are really pushing forward during this COVID crisis.
They really are.
And you and I spoke to them.
We did. We had a good time.
We did. Let's listen to them. Even though the Zoom door is old and creaky right now.
Still was a good time.
Here it is. So, Nicole, let's play a little word association, shall we?
Oh, okay.
Okay, here we go. Yes.
No.
And.
Why?
Yes, and.
Because.
Well, I think that waiting in our Zoom machine will be answers to my overall question. Shall we hop in and see what happens?
Yes, please press the button.
Here we
go. What happens?
Oh, look where we are. We're at The Hideout.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun. We love The Hideout. Let me introduce everybody and slaughter some names, shall we?
Oh, do it. You haven't slaughtered names in 2021 yet.
This will be the first. We have Kareem Badra. Badra? It's close. Yeah. Roy Yannick. Hi, Roy.
Close.
Yannick. Yannick Asura. And Courtney Hopkin.
Perfect.
Single Hopkin. You guys are the masterminds behind Hideout Theater. So, first of all, welcome to Offstage and On the Air. I don't know that we've had a Hideout as just like the overall Hideout ever on the 12 years that we've been on the show, which is crazy.
I know. That is so nutty.
Tell my audience, if they don't know what the Hideout is, what's the Hideout?
The Hideout is an improv theater in downtown Austin. It's been around since 1999. And we do fully improvised plays. We teach classes in how to do improvised theater. We're also a full service coffee house with a beer and wine license. So classes, shows, and coffee. And we have a community of hundreds of performers that kind of do stuff with us. That's the executive summary.
That's good. Well, it's nice to have an executive summary. I think we need to throw it up the flagpole, see who salutes, see what the boys upstairs say about its synergies.
The synergies are good.
Well, you know, improv is so strong here in Austin. And, you know, for a while we had 5 improv theaters. Now I think we have 4 because we just lost the institution. But that's huge. And I've always heard that after New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, it's Austin. Does that ring true with you guys?
Yeah, yeah, Austin's definitely first in our mind.
I love it.
That's yeah, what I meant it's to definitely say. True. Austin has, especially in the last 10 years, has had a really strong improv community. I think a lot of people here, I think it's so strong here because people do it without the sort of dangling carrot of mainstream big success. They do it because they love improv. And yes, we have a lot of people who are just itching to be on stage and get in their hours and get better.
Right. And the folks that do improv range from like, looks, it's a huge range of people that are just hobbyists, people that want to improve their marketing social skills for business, to people that want to perhaps make a career at improv, or others that just want to, you know, hone their creativity for other creative interests. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah, we got people who are just looking for something to do on a Saturday. So it could have been us, or it could have been pottery. We got people who are, you know, are interested in comedy and want to know how comedy works. We have people who are looking to write things and maybe want to figure out how to do storytelling in a more, you know, in a in a way that will help them progress their stories. And we have people who are looking to, you know, be performers. You know, we have, and we love having those kinds of people from all different points of view, because it makes the shows so rich.
Right. And so you guys have been around since 1999. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you guys were the first improv theater here.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Us being like individuals, weren't at the Hideout in 1999.
Sure.
But it was started by Sean Hill, and he ran it for 10 years. And then Kareem and I and Jessica Arge, who's not here, became the owners in 2009. But yeah, it was the first and only improv theater for a very long time in Austin.
Well, and I will say, y'all took it through quite a transformation in 2009.
Yeah, we started taking classes at the Hideout right when there was a resurgence in kind of interest in improv. So we kind of joined at the, I don't want to say the low point, but the point at which there were the fewest number of performers doing improv in Austin. And so
the point at which they would let people like us on stage.
Yeah, we were halfway through our second class and they were like, we need people for this weekend. So
you can call that the turning point.
Yeah. I don't want to say we were the cause of it, but we were around when it happens. But I don't know.
Well, that is great. I, for one, am like really thrilled y'all are here. So let's take ourselves back to the middle of March of 2020. Well, we always talk, you know, when we're talking, you know, like more standard theater, we always say how important it is. I say this a lot, that it's really important to sit shoulder to shoulder in an audience with people that are trading energy with those on stage. Mm-hmm, yeah. But that's more so with improv. I mean, improv is all about that connection with the audience. So how have you guys, I mean, I'm assuming there was like cathartic moments that finally either dragged you or drove you to have a pretty decent online presence.
I think the inability of the performers to just not perform is really what drove us getting online. It wasn't like we were like, people need us, or we were like, we have to do this. We were just like, we have to do this at theater as like individual people. We were just like, what do we do if we're not doing shows? And so we started right away.
Yeah, I was directing rehearsals for a show that was going to launch like the week after we went dark, you know, and I originally thought, oh, we'll be dark for a couple of weeks and then we'll open like we planned. And that obviously didn't happen. But yeah, we jumped into online stuff almost immediately. And part of that was due to the fact that Kareem and I are part of a 4-person group called Parallelogramma Phonograph, or
PGRAPH. You are indeed.
Or PGRAPH for short. And you normally have a weekly show at the Hideout. And it was super weird to not be doing this weekly thing we had done for 14 years, you know, like a show every week. And Casey from our group, she was like, we should just jump in immediately. So we did. We jumped in immediately to doing online improv, and then quickly that spread to the Hideout. And we found ourselves doing our normal slate of like 10 to 11 shows a week, but now online in Zoom, streamed to Twitch. And we've slowed that pace down a little bit since then, but we're still doing it.
And how have you found it by and large? Has it been successful creatively and financially?
So show wise, it is what we found, or I think Kareem and Courtney would back me up on this. It's different for everyone, but the people who are still doing it have found like after you do about 3 shows, you kind of get used to it and you start getting some of the same reward that you get when you're performing in person. Obviously your audience interaction becomes different, and it becomes more about the performers that you can see and interact with, and also kind of your own perception of the audience. I personally will watch the chat room of whatever service we're streaming to just to see people typing like, ha ha, or love that to get the get the audience feedback, and Cream doesn't do that at all. But so we found it very rewarding financially. The shows are not financially.
Yeah, it's not. The shows aren't making any money. We decided very early on, or we started out very early on, just putting our shows, the virtual shows, out for free, as a lot of artists and performers just were in general. Like, no one knew what to do with our energy, so we're just like, well, let's just put something out into the world that can make someone's day or week a little better. So we weren't forcing people to pay for shows quite intentionally. And then we just kept that trend up, even with having, like, you can buy an optional ticket is a thing that we did on the site, on the website. But the fact is, people are very comfortable with consuming things online without paying for them. And rather than put things behind a paywall, we just decided to continue letting that be an option, honestly.
True. And so tell me about classes. So now, how I know the way, you know, I've taken a fair amount of improv classes myself, and I know how they run for the most part. I would think doing it online, especially for someone who hasn't been before, that there's not already a rapport with the other people on the screen, I might think that's kind of difficult. What's that experience like for those? Have you had anybody that have come in fresh during this time?
Yeah, we have lots of people trying improv or starting improv. I think that if we frame it in the context of normal life and how our life has been up until this point, yeah, why would someone try improv classes on the internet? But we're not in that, and we're all in our homes and we can't see people. And so people are glad for the opportunity to just connect with somebody, even if it's through a Zoom screen. I mean, sure, it sucks, but it's better than not doing it. And if you jump into an online improv class, you are very likely to be in a class with somebody from a different country who is in a different country, who's in a different country, in a different state, in a different city. We have students from India, students from Europe. We have students from all over the United States. So, like, even if you try the improv and it's not actually fun online, you've made a couple of friends in all sorts of different parts of the world.
That's great. So
that's really cool.
There
are aspects of doing it online that are actually better or different, but there are definitely aspects that are I think are better, in that, you know, things like being able to send people to breakout rooms. You know, in a class, in a physical classroom, you can put people in groups, but then there's noise that bleeds between the groups, which, you know, can be an interesting, fun energy. But this, we actually have this ability to send people into a private room to do a scene for 2 minutes or whatever it is. And if anyone has any nervousness or is anxious about other people hearing them or whatever, that all goes away because they know they're in this private little contained room for, you know, the minute and a half or whatever when they're doing the exercise. It actually works out pretty well, which has been exciting.
Sure, I think that'd be really good.
I've been very surprised. One thing that took me completely by surprise was that there are certain performers who were always like good, but online they're like, they've leveled up like tremendously. Yeah. There's just something of, like, they thrive in that environment. I think because there's less distractions and maybe the audience isn't getting to their nerves as much. And I'm like, wow, I'm really, I think they're showing signs of their ability that I had never seen before. Mm-hmm.
Which is odd because, well, I mean, you know, I'll teach you a little bit of improv that perhaps you didn't know. It's always about raising stakes. And when there's no audience and you're behind a screen, the stakes are lower.
Personally. Feel that way, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the dichotomy. So we don't have a whole bunch of time left, but I wanted to capture a couple of other things. And I've talked about this when we talk about improv. I want you to talk a little bit about how good improv training is for businesses, for people that are not necessarily in the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm. Courtney, take it away.
Okay.
Glowing.
This is one of the things about improv, is that you're always like, am I talking now? We've always done corporate training, helping people feel looser and able to say yes to new ideas, to incorporate this into their team training, so that they they can hear what other people are saying, say yes to it, even if it's just for the moment, even if it's now how they brainstorm. And we really feel like improv helps people do that. And so now what we're doing online, we're really helping people with their new reality, which is meeting in Zoom. And, you know, creating either something fun for them to do in the middle of, you know, their hours long Zoom meetings, or teaching them new ways to have some levity in their Zoom lifestyle. And even outside of that, we'll do, like, we've done some corporate parties, basically, where we do a show for them mm-hmm. in the middle of their party. So anything we can, basically, we're in the business right now of lightening up all this online video conferencing.
Sure.
Improv thrives because of collaboration and thrives because of other people. That's what makes it work. And there isn't a single business in any industry that doesn't involve working with other people. Even if you're a freelancer, you have to work with other people. So, you know, learning how to do that more efficiently and better is just good for anyone.
Right. And I'll argue that for almost any position in corporate America, the amount of training you get in improv to help you think on your feet, to help you think creatively, to help you think, forgive me for saying this, outside the box, is gonna be really good for their business, their bottom line, as they say. Courtney's in her box.
I was like, Courtney, you gotta get out of here.
So the last thing I want to talk about, and just like the smallest soundbite that you can, you guys are also working, I don't know if you're doing it now in Zoom, but once we start working again, you work with kids, don't you? You have a youth program?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thanks for being on the show. Just give us a little snippet about what that is, and then we'll have to say goodbye.
Okay. If you're bored at home with your kids, we have classes for them with other kids, and we have shows they can watch.
Awesome. Where can folks go to get information about all the good things at the Hideout?
TheHideoutTheater.com. And you can spell that with an E-R or an R-E, though R-E is the proper spelling.
Good for you. Our audiences know that. The last little question I'll ask you, do you guys have a plan for the future? Do you know what's your thinking about when you're going to have butts in seats again?
Our general thinking is not as concrete as we would like, but we don't want to be doing anything in person until we are 100% sure we're not putting anyone at risk, it's really the way it's got to be. It's probably going to be at least 6 months, I would guess, unless there's a miracle and we wake up one day and have all gotten a vaccine.
I'm hoping
for
a miracle.
Of course, planning on returning. But it's just a matter of doing it safely.
In my opinion, one of those miracles happened on January 20th, but that's a whole nother story.
One of those miracles that took a lot of hard work.
Yes. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I hope we get you on again soon after we're all up and running. Godspeed, as they say.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much. Okay. So there's lots of opportunities for folks to see and learn improv online from the Hideout and other companies as well. So that's it for the show today. So join us next week, folks, when Nicole and I look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye, everybody.